welcome and thanks for tuning in to Revolution Radio. And now it's time for that feral hippie herself, an infotartic esoteric...
Hey.
What happened?
When the break, I'll check on it. Hello, Jim?
Yes.
Hey, something was wrong with the intro. We're ready to go. I have to check on it.
Okay, you're going to give me a countdown or what?
No, we're live now.
Okay.
Sorry.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, on my very first Monday on our new time schedule of Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 Central. That's noon to 2 Eastern and 9 to 11 Pacific. I'm going to provide today a rundown on some of the latest developments in relation to the election and the fake pandemic, and add a few other comments before inviting calls for the second hour, just to anticipate, of course, the number, as before, 540-352-4452, 540-352-4452. Now, Alan Dershowitz, about whom I have very mixed feelings, is talking about the clock ticking on Trump's legal team, out of timeouts for getting its case heard by the Supreme Court before December 14th, when Electoral College members will vote for the presidency. And by the way, notice that until the Electoral College members vote on December 14th, there is no president-elect. So all this nonsense about calling him President-elect Biden is just more propaganda, disinformation, and bullshit from the mainstream media and desperate Democrats who are trying to convey the false impression that it's a done deal when, in fact, it's anything but. They have to move very quickly to get the evidence in front of the courts if they want to get this case to the Supreme Court, where they may have a 5-4 majority on some of these issues, Dershowitz said. We have to have all the facts, all the evidence ready to go to the courts before then, because the American public is entitled to know that this was a fair election in every respect, and this is a nonpartisan issue. Americans should be interested in knowing that we have voter security. Of course, it was a completely corrupt election. They're going through every aspect of the Constitution, trying to find something to hang their hats on, Dershowitz added. I'd also be teaching a course on election security. This is good for the country. We're hearing these issues being raised now. Whether it has an impact on the election or not, or the January in Georgia, it's surely having an impact on making our elections more secure in years to come. Let me explain that I see two or three possible ways in which this is playing out. There have been hearings in a number of states where demonstrations of voter fraud, of voter theft, changing of votes and the like, ballot stuffing ad nauseum have been presented, which may lead the state legislatures who have the constitutional responsibility of determining how the state's electoral votes will be cast to contradict the popular vote in their states, given that it was fraudulent and they've seen massive evidence thereof, to cast their votes for the candidate who ought properly to have won, Donald Trump. Now, if that happens in several of these states, it ought to be sufficient for Trump to acquire 270 or more Electoral College votes. That's one avenue of approach. A second is for the Supreme Court to be provided with ample proof that Democrat votes and voters were not treated the same way as Republican votes and voters, that there was a disparity, and that, therefore, not all American citizens received equal protection under the law, especially with regard to our most sacred responsibility as citizens, casting votes for the president and vice president of the United States. If the court is convinced that there has been a violation of equal protection in the 14th Amendment, then they may vote to nullify the election and, following the Constitution, send the matter back to Congress, where the House would vote to determine the president and the Senate the vice president. I'm just in awe of how clearly the founding fathers thought all of this through, even when there were such a smaller number of states involved. This was pure political genius. Now, in the House, because there are 50 states, there'll be 50 votes, but it turns out that the Republicans control 26, the Democrats 23 with one divided. So, and wouldn't it be an irony if in Nancy Pelosi's House, they would devote to reelect Donald Trump as president, as I foresee a very strong possibility. I'd say each of those has about a 50-50 chance, but leaving over just a slim margin for the alternative that, given this was massively fraudulent, that the president might feel an obligation to declare a state of insurrection and have the military supervise a national recount. The fact is that the evidence suggests, and they were following all this in real time, Trump won around 73 or 74 million votes, Joe Biden 23 or 24. In other words, it was a $50 million vote difference, which is why the Democrats were so active in using these Dominion machines and other forms of vote fraud, but nevertheless overdid it. One observer has commented that he felt a mistake the Democrats made was in saying this was the cleanest election ever and that there was no fraudulent voting, instead of saying, as an alternative, that there was no more than usual. Because now any vote fraud that's emerged contradicts the official claims by the Democrats and contradicts them. Significantly, Associate Justice Alito has moved up the deadline for Pennsylvania to respond to the Republican Representative Mike Kelly's lawsuit alleging that the 2019 state election reform known as Act 77 violates both the state and federal constitution by creating a so-called no-excuse mail-in voting regime. Many took the Wednesday deadline as political theater, saying it would place a case outside the safe harbor window, which requires that controversies concerning the appointment of all or any of the electors be determined at least 6 days before the time fixed for the meeting of the electors. In other words, the Tuesday deadline might signal the Supreme Court takes Kelly's case, which was rejected by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court in time. In strict theory, the court has no jurisdiction to settle Pennsylvania constitutional issues, such as whether the state statute at question Act 77 violates the state constitution. Generally, such matters are the exclusive realm of a state Supreme Court, but there are exceptions, including because the state is acting under a direct grant of authority from the U.S. Constitution to manage federal elections. The U.S. Supreme Court can become involved, can determine whether the Pennsylvania statutory and constitutional regime of laws does or does not violate the Constitution. He frames the issue this way: do the Elections and Electors clauses of the United States Constitution permit Pennsylvania to violate its state constitution's restrictions on its lawmaking power when enacting legislation for the conduct of federal elections? And do the First and 14th Amendments to the Constitution permit the dismissal of petitioners' claims with prejudice on the basis of laches, or doing so forecloses any opportunity for petitioners to seek retrospective or prospective relief for ongoing constitutional violations? The Elections Clause of the Constitution is Article 1, Section 4, Clause 1, which basically says state legislatures can set their own rules for electors. The Supreme Court has said the framers intended the clause as a grant of authority to issue procedural regulations, not as a source of power to dictate electoral outcomes, to favor or disfavor a class of candidates, or to evade important constitutional restraints. That's all very significant, I believe, and a major development. Meanwhile, 222 Republican congressmen won't say Biden is president-elect, which, as I've observed, is highly appropriate because he is not president-elect. That's simply propaganda being promulgated by the mainstream media, unsurprisingly, as the lackeys of the Democrat globalist big tech social media giant campaign against Donald Trump. A survey taken the morning after Trump posted a 46-minute video claiming he'd won the election and that corrupt forces were trying to steal it, only 25 Republicans acknowledged Biden's win and 222 opposed it. This was a very fine presentation the president made, which, of course, was generally ignored by the mainstream media. 90% of House and Senate GOP members have yet to say who the winner is. Only 8 Republicans have said they support Trump's claim of victory. The survey found 11 of 52 Senate Republicans acknowledge Biden's win. Out of 14 House Republicans who recognize Biden as the winner, 6 will be retiring from politics. 2 others represent districts Biden won, except with a dispute who can say Biden actually won any of these precincts. It's very, very interesting what's taking place here. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said the future will take care of itself and would not comment on the president's claims of voter fraud, but the evidence is simply ubiquitous. Meanwhile, the president has asked for the names of the 25 Republicans in Congress who reportedly consider Joe Biden to be president-elect, which, as I observed, is not even technically true. I mean, the fact that he's reported to have won the popular vote and the electoral votes, which have yet, when the matter is contested and the electors have yet to cast their votes, makes it technically improper and false. The president tweeted out an article from the Washington Post claiming 25 Republicans consider Biden to be the president-elect. 25? Wow. I am surprised there are so many. We have just begun to fight. Please send me a list of the 25 rhinos. I read the fake news Washington Post as little as possible. The Post survey said of all 249 Republicans in the House and Senate, only 25 would acknowledge that Joe Biden is president-elect. Meanwhile, speaking of the ongoing presentations and discoveries of voter fraud, Arizona's legislative leaders have called for an audit of the Maricopa County Dominion election software and equipment. That's a very important development. A significant number of voters believe that fraud occurred, and with the number of irregularities, it's easy to understand why. Especially concerning are the allegations made surrounding the venue Dominion, whom some of you may recall, the Dominion machines have the ability to switch votes from Trump to Biden, for example. There's no known instance of a vote having been changed from Biden to Trump. They have the ability to print new ballots. They also have the ability to weight votes. This is a very significant aspect of Dominion, where obviously if their software were clean and responsible, they would make it available, but instead they make it proprietary and conceal. When everyone who's ever studied computer science knows we're talking about what would be among the simplest programs one could write to take a number n and add 1 to it to produce a new number n plus 1 for the various candidates. But where their weighting procedure, for example, allows them to weight, say, a Democrat vote 1.3 and a Republican only 0.7. So when you add the two weightings of 1.3 and 0.7 together, that equals 2. So it looks on the audit as though everything's been legit. And in the process, the Democrat votes in this instance have been given precedence and priority. The claim is made, of course, that Dominion software was used in Venezuela to benefit Hugo Chavez. My opinion is the opposite, that it almost certainly was being used in Venezuela to defeat Hugo Chavez and that the CIA was involved in this. I have reported before that it appears that Gina Haspel was actually in Frankfurt, Germany, overseeing the servers that were used to steal the election from President Trump when a special ops force raided, that five of them were killed in the process when her bodyguards sought to protect her, that on the flight to Guantanamo, she decided it was in her best interest to disclose all she knows, which has now, in my opinion, been concealed by a fake obituary claiming she's deceased to try to call off the dogs. I don't think anyone familiar with intel would be surprised by any of this. But it's very clear that Trump laid a trap in his executive order of 12 September 2018, anticipated there'd be massive voter fraud, and created a situation where foreign-based companies and their personnel are subject to seizure and prosecution, where Dominion is based in Canada, Scylla is in Spain, and the servers were in Frankfurt, but apparently on American territory. Plus, it extends to any of those who report the false results as a part of the conspiracy to defraud the American people of their constitutional rights, which would include CNN, MSNBC, the New York Times, the Washington Post. I believe this, in retrospect, is going to turn out to have been a brilliant sting, that Donald Trump was following the art of war just as he does the art of the deal, and that this will prove to have been the fulfillment of his campaign pledge to drain the swamp on an heretofore unprecedented, even unimaginable scale. This is my prediction. Remember now that the Arizona governor rushed to sign legislation to allow the most populous county, Maricopa, which determines who wins Arizona, to use Dominion machines in the 2020 election. Arizona is now reporting a 79.9 voter turnout, the highest in the country, according to the latest aggregated results from Statistica. It's also easily the biggest turnout in the state's history. Back in November 16th, Arizona was reporting a 65.9 voter turnout. Now on November 30th, just 2 weeks later, the Secretary of State claims that the turnout was actually 79.9. I mean, this is completely ridiculous, totally absurd. County clerks are now coming forward and admitting something's off with the canvassing, that the numbers are not adding up. Meanwhile, and this is just a variation on the forms of corruption we've seen in the states of Pennsylvania, Michigan, Georgia, Wisconsin, Arizona, Nevada, a pro-Biden effort offered Native Americans $25 to $500 Visa gift cards and jewelry to vote for Biden. I mean, how bad is that? Key Native American leaders working with the Biden campaign offered tribal members and associates Visa gift cards, jewelry, and other swag to vote in the presidential election, which is obviously graft and corruption. In one long video, officials from the Reno-Sparks Indian Colony are shown offering a raffle for gift cards in the values of $25, $100, $250, and $500 to those who can prove they voted. Other gifts include bracelets, necklaces, earrings, T-shirts, and masks. If you come here to vote, or if you voted already, RSIC is having a raffle. She also said there's lots of great things to push you guys to get out here to vote. In the same video, she's shown wearing a Biden-Harris antivirus mask in front of the Biden-Harris campaign bus. Trump campaign is expected to present the videos in a Carson City court as it presses a challenge to enough votes to overturn the state's majority for Joe Biden. A shocking number of states have discovered that groups claiming to support the Native American community in the polls have engaged in blatantly illegal bribery and voter incentivization with cash cards, gas cards, electronics, and other items. This scandal appears to have been rampant in Nevada, posts on the Nevada Navy Vote Project Facebook page shows that similar raffles were conducted in 15 Nevada Native communities, with 116 voters receiving $6,650 in cash prizes. How bad is that? Meanwhile, there's been so much fraud that even Fox News has begun to pay attention. I can't tell you how disappointed I am in Fox News. If you've started wondering at what point the amount of fraud is enough to convince people widespread orchestrated cheating took place in the 2020 election, that Trump was reelected in a landslide on November 3rd, his victory may have been so large we'll never know its true scope, because no one is looking at states like Oregon and Virginia. All eyes remain on the 6 undecided, where the Trump campaign lawyers and others continue to produce busloads of rock-solid evidence, where the number of illegal ballots in these 6 states is outside of the margin of error, meaning Trump wins if the illegal ballots are discarded in Nevada, Arizona, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Georgia. The Trump campaign in Nevada has now identified 18,000 ballots cast by people who are not legal residents of the state. Some, for example, are Northern Californians who have a second home in Tahoe, or snowbirds who fly to southern states for the winter months. Whatever their situation, they're not supposed to be voting in Nevada, but they did anyway. In addition, a court granted the Trump campaign the right to conduct a limited statistical audit of the mail-in votes in Nevada. The result? 2% of the votes were cast by people who never received their ballot in the mail, 1% by people who now say they didn't vote. With a 3% fraud rate in mail-in voting, that works out to 17,300 fake ballots. That accounts altogether for 35,300 fraudulent ballots in Nevada, and it only scratches the surface of the evidence that's been uncovered. They had so much evidence to transport the campaign's hearing before the Nevada legislature on Friday, they had to rent a second vehicle. Biden's margin of victory, 33,596 in that state. And like every other so-called swing state, with the exception of the two that have the most stringent restrictions on absentee and mail-in ballots, Florida and Ohio, Biden's artificially, in other words, is sufficient to overcome the Biden lead. Biden's artificial lead in Georgia is even narrower, about 12,000, and that's where much of the election drama took place this week. The Trump campaign produced irrefutable video evidence of fraud on election night. The video was from surveillance cameras in the State Farm Arena in Fulton County. The supervisor told the Republican ballot observers and the press at 10 p.m. that the counting was being stopped until 8 p.m. the following morning. However, they actually... 4 of the workers stayed behind and pull out suitcases full of ballots from underneath a desk and proceeded to process votes with no observers present. Those particular voting machines turn out to scan about 3,000 ballots per hour. The workers had 5 machines scanning the mystery suitcase ballots for 2 hours with no witnesses in the room. That's roughly time enough to scan 30,000 ballots in a state where Biden only had a 12,000 vote margin. The Biden campaign has to be breaking out in a flop sweat at this point. The weak and ineffectual governor of Georgia, Brian Kemp, is now passing the buck by demanding that Georgia's Secretary of State figure out just what the hell is happening in the video. This is a CCTV. It's really stunning. The members of the legislature really were astonished when they watched this take place. The author thinks it's time instead for either Georgia's attorney general or a U.S. attorney to figure out what happened and bring appropriate charges. There's now so much provable fraud, even Fox News is noticing. Hold on to your hats. I think we're going to see the first of the states flip. Pretty damn interesting. Meanwhile, Trump has proposed a landmark election reform and overhaul of election security system. President Trump said he plans to pass landmark legislation reforms, along with a comprehensive overhaul of election security systems in the United States after the upcoming Georgia race. After we win the U.S. Senate, we need to pass landmark election reform, including voter ID, residency verification, citizenship confirmation, he said. They want to say he doesn't have to be a citizen. You've got to see who's voting. It's a disgrace that in 2020, no state in America even makes any real attempt to verify that those who cast ballots by mail are eligible and lawfully registered voters. The evidence of fraud is overwhelming. In the November general election, widespread incidents of irregularities and alleged fraud have been reported, including votes cast in the name of dead people across state lines, backdated ballots, and glitches caused by human error that switched Trump votes to Democrat-Biden votes. Meanwhile, rejection rates for mail-in ballots have been uncharacteristically low, despite the record-breaking number of mail-in ballots sent out by state officials, citing the COVID-19 pandemic. Meanwhile, President Trump and Melania attended the rally in support of Senator David Perdue and Senator Kelly Loeffler in Valdosta, Georgia, on December 5th. That was Saturday. This Melania is just doing a wonderful job as First Lady, in my opinion. The crowd at the rally was really very substantial and wildly enthusiastic. I'm just looking at a fragment of the crowd where there are probably, more people in this fragment of the crowd at Valdosta than were at all of the rallies conducted by Joe Biden and Kamala Harris combined. The very idea that they could have won an historic vote is absurd on its face. And it's astounding to me that so many Americans appear to be in a state of denial when it makes no sense whatsoever to suppose that Biden and Harris, where Biden in three campaigns had not won a single primary or a single caucus until South Carolina, and Harris, who dropped out before the very first caucus in Iowa, could have been viable candidates. Indeed, according to Professor Michael McDonnell at the University of Florida, over 65 million voted through the mail, far more than 2016, and yet the rejection rate has been lower than those seen for several states. The GOP currently holds a 50-48 lead over Democrats in the Senate, of course, and will secure a majority if at least one of the two candidates is elected. Otherwise, it would be a 50-50 split where the vice president would serve as the tiebreaker. And if the vice president were Kamala Harris, God forbid, that would mean the Democrats would be in control of all three branches of Congress, the White House, the Senate, and the House of Representatives. Meanwhile, let me just add that Trump supporters at the rally were targeting Fox News, and I think with good reason. Crowd at Trump rally in Georgia lashes out at traitor Fox News. We trusted you. There were boisterous chants of stop the steal and fight for Trump. Trump supporters blasted Fox News correspondents on Saturday at a spirited rally in Georgia. At the event in Valdosta, Trump followers lambasted the cable news network for its presidential election coverage. Before the event took place, numerous Trump supporters spotted and then confronted members of Fox News. Trump devotees slammed Fox News for their coverage of the 2020 presidential election, especially early calling the state of Arizona in favor of Democratic candidate Joe Biden. I was dumbfounded when that occurred, just as when Virginia was also called for Biden. In both cases, Trump was ahead in the tabulated vote. It's clear those were planned elements of a psyop to make it look as though a Biden victory were inevitable when the situation was anything but. One Trump supporter is seen on video telling a Fox News reporter, Fox News did not call the election. According to Sky News producer Sarah Goh, the Fox News journalists were getting the most abuse from the pro-Trump crowd, a dubious honor that is usually dedicated to CNN. There were also shouts of, we trusted you, and traitors aimed at the cable news network. There was a chance Fox is fake news. Now, this is a very serious development for Fox. I'm getting reports that they're losing a very large number of their followers. And frankly, this is embarrassingly bad. I must acknowledge that I was thrown for a loop by an informal conversation with Tucker Carlson at some resort area, possibly an amusement park or a fishing pier, where Tucker was asked about 9/11 and said that 9/11 truthers are parasites. Frankly, I can't imagine a single statement Tucker Carlson could make that I would find more disillusioning. It undermines any confidence I've had in him in the past. And as all of you know, I have recommended Tucker hundreds of times as the only program worth watching. Well, this has put a severe dent in my enthusiasm for Tucker Carlson. As a founder of Scholars for 9/11 Truth in December of 2005, I spent a vast amount of effort bringing together experts from all around the world, pilots, physicists, engineers, structural, civil, mechanical, electrical, to contribute together in a joint effort to expose the truth about 9/11. You can see the archival website 911scholars.org. Not any longer active, but where you can see what we were doing there in publishing articles, promoting lectures, organizing conferences. I was flown around the world to address issues on 9/11. My wife and I, for example, in December of 2006, were flown to Athens, Greece, where I would appear on a three-hour television program hosted by the leading muckraking journalist in Greece, who's been responsible for exposing corruption that's brought down past Greek administrations. Going in, I was told that the 12 panelists, only few would ask questions. I said, not tonight. I was correct. All 12 asked questions. They'd done a brilliant job of putting together a dozen or 15 video clips from 9/11, set me up perfectly. They actually extended the program by another half an hour so that for 3.5 hours, this sensational program about 9/11 was being broadcast worldwide by satellite. I believe it was the high water mark for the 9/11 truth movement. But even as I was participating in that sensational program, traitors and scholars were undermining my efforts to bring out the truth, because we were going off the reservation. I'd long since lost faith in the idea that nanothermite could have been responsible for the destruction of the Twin Towers, which was nevertheless the position advocated by Steve Jones, a physicist from BYU, whom I had made my co-chair when David Ray Griffin declined the honor and recommended him in his stead. Griffin would later acknowledge to me, given the unparalleled success of the society, that at the time he didn't have much confidence that it would make a difference, but he had to admit he was mistaken. Stephen Jones, Kevin Ryan, and other miscreants sought to unravel the society because I'd featured Judy Wood on a radio show when I was in Arizona giving a couple of lectures on 9/11, talking about her theory about the use of directed energy weapons, because I knew that was a more reasonable account than the nanothermite. where in 2011, T. Mark Hightower, who's a chemical engineer, and I would publish three articles about nanothermite, exposing that it couldn't possibly have been responsible for the destruction of the towers, observing, among other points, that in order for an explosive to destroy a material, it must have a detonation velocity equal to or greater than the speed of sound in that material, where the speed of sound in steel is 6,100 meters per second, in concrete, 3,200 meters per second. And yet the highest detonation velocity attributable to nanothermite is only 895 meters per second, meaning it can't possibly have blown apart concrete, much less steel. Even Niels Harrit, who's a associate professor of chemistry emeritus from the University of Copenhagen, had been asked to calculate how much nanothermite would have been required to destroy a tower, and he estimated 29,000 metric tons. I mean, it's preposterous. That's like filling a 110-story building with circus peanuts, and that's because nanothermite is such a feeble explosive, estimated at only 1/13 the explosive power of TNT. Well, why would you need then, 13 times as much to equal TNT? Why not use TNT? Indeed, those of you who have followed the evidence understand that what we were witnessing was no collapse of the Twin Towers, that they were blowing apart in every direction from the top down, that all the floors remained stationary, waiting their turn to be blown to kingdom come, in the memorable phrase of Morgan Reynolds. And when it was done, they were destroyed to ground level. Now, this is completely different than Building 7, which actually was brought down by a classic controlled demolition 7 hours later at 5:20 Eastern time, where all the floors came down at the same time at roughly the speed of free fall. And when it was over, there was a stack of debris equal to 5.5 floors, or 12% of the original 47, where that building, had it not been surrounded by the two giant towers, would have been the largest in some 37 states. Obviously, this was done by very different causal mechanisms, and indeed, the buildings were being converted into millions of cubic yards of very fine dust, not Building 7, of course, but 1 and 2, the North and the South Tower, which is a signature of the use of nuclear devices. Joe Olson, who's a civil and structural engineer, has done some brilliant work, as have many others. Veterans Today actually did an extensive series about the use of nuclear devices on 9/11, and that's how it was done, a very sophisticated project with a small nuke. The design of the buildings must be understood, a tube within a tube divide design, where the inner tube consisted of the 47 massive core columns, elevators, and the like. The outer tubes, some 230 external steel support columns that were quite formidable and massive in and of themselves, connected by steel trusses connected at one end to the core columns, at the other to the external steel support columns, filled with 4 to 8 inches of concrete. The variance being because the trusses had 4-inch deep grooves, so in some places 4-inch, another 8. Because the buildings were 208 feet on a side, each building was an acre of concrete on a steel truss. The buildings could not have collapsed from the impact of airplanes. Donald Trump even made that observation in the immediate aftermath when he was interviewed by a local New York television station. He explained that the builders who had done the Twin Towers now work for him, that planes could not possibly have brought down the towers, that something else had to be involved. Bombs, meaning some additional powerful source of explosives. He had it exactly right. The nuclear device appears to have been planted beneath the inner core and blown upward. So you had a bottom to top destruction of the inner core of the building, and then the effect observable from the outer blowing apart in every direction from the top down, and conversion into millions of cubic yards of very fine dust, where the U.S. Geological Survey did a study of 35 dust samples from lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event, including lithium, lanthanum, barium, strontium, tritium, some of which only exist in radioactive form. I would feature Judy a total of 15 times, pioneering the interaction of the computer and radio, where we go to her website and she'd go through various studies, photographs, and so forth she had there. This lasted until 2008, when I featured her and John Hutchison, who claims to have performed rather miraculous experiments in his garage, including levitating metals, where I asked him about his background, such as is in the area of electromagnetism, among the most complex in physics, and he replied dismissively, saying he'd flunked crayons and coloring books, which I thought was highly inappropriate, but Judy thought was hilarious, and thereafter she ceased to have any contact with me. When I organized the Vancouver hearings in 2012, however, I nevertheless invited her and John Hutchison to be speakers there to represent all points of view. Judy not only declined to even respond, but after Hutchison had agreed, talked him into not, I had actually posted a 5-star review of her book as a stupendous compilation of evidence and photographs, but noticed that it seemed to me she hadn't really, that while she might have ruled out large nukes, she hadn't ruled out micro or mini nukes. When I returned from the conference, where much evidence of the use of nukes was produced, I found there'd been over 2,000 critical comments on my review of her book, 5-star review. This was part and parcel of my realization that Judy Woods New Group actually represented a cult. They have a sacred text, Where Did the Towers Go? They have a mystical leader, Judy Woods herself. They have a Praetorian Guard consisting of a fellow named Thomas Potter, Andrew Johnson, and a number of others who are true believers and will attack anyone who offers the least exception to her position, which is completely unscientific. I therefore realized I had to revise my review, downgrade it to 3 stars, and added the evidence from the U.S. Geological Survey about lithium, lanthanum, barium, strontium, tritium, and so forth, as evidence that it had been a nuclear event. Instead of responding to that evidence and revising her position, which would have entailed rejecting hypotheses she previously accepted, accepting hypotheses she previously rejected, and leaving others in suspense, the supporters of Judy just laid on. And the last time I looked, there were over 7,500 comments on my review of her book, probably the largest number ever in the history of Amazon.com for comments on a review, almost all of which were overwhelmingly negative from supporters, reflecting once again that this is akin to a religious cult. This is a pseudoscience. This is not bona fide science. Bona fide science is responsive to data. And that's what we don't have with regard to the coronavirus, by the way. It turns out a couple of Germans are bringing a lawsuit where the German Corona Extra Parliamentary Inquiry Committee, which was founded on July 10th of 2020, is leading an international effort to hold accountable those responsible for using fraudulent testing to engineer the appearance of a dangerous pandemic, to implement economically devastating lockdowns, where pandemic measures have caused tremendous harm, killing more people than the virus itself by restricting routine medical care to people with acute and chronic health conditions, which have nothing to do with COVID-19, while the government of many nations have the same separation of power as the U.S., where you have separate legislative, judicial, and executive branches. We're now finding this separation has been breached and nearly destroyed in most places. We now have plenty of data showing the lethality of COVID-19 is on a par with the common flu, and that the absolute risk of death is equivalent to the risk of dying in an automobile accident. The flaws of PCR testing have been capitalized upon to incite fear, in order to benefit an agenda developed by private corporations that includes not only big tech companies, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the Wellcome Trust, but also the World Health Organization, the United Nations, and the World Economic Forum, which now, of course, wants to introduce the Great Reset, whereby we will have no property and no assets, and we're supposed to be happier than we ever have, living on a guaranteed income and a minuscule living accommodation, a space of about 300 square feet, where as long as we agree to the vaccination regimen, we'll be able to continue, provided we behave in accordance with the dictates of the policies being imposed upon us, lest we be cut off from digital currency, which will be our only source of financing. And if we persist in opposing, we'll be declared a public health menace and put in a FEMA camp. And if we don't come around even after, I guarantee our heads will be separated from our bodies. So there are very good reasons to be alarmed by all of these developments, which are proceeding apace, even though a new study has found asymptomatic spread is not a significant source for the virus to be spread. Where an asymptomatic carrier is someone who's not displayed symptoms after being infected, but may spread the virus to others. Let me say, after being infected, they really mean by that having a positive test. This is different from someone who is pre-symptomatic, meaning the person doesn't feel or look sick, but eventually shows symptoms later and does transmit the virus during that pre-symptomatic phase. The study published in Nature, which may be the most prestigious scientific journal in the world, identified 300 asymptomatic positive cases through a massive screening program of more than 9 million Chinese citizens post-lockdown in Wuhan, based upon PCR tests. Samples of the asymptomatic cases were also cultured in the lab, and no viable virus was found, meaning it cannot transmit a virus. The scientists identified and followed 1,174 close contacts of the asymptomatic cases and found that none of the contacts tested positive for COVID-19. This study confirms what physicians have known and non-scientists have suspected for millennia, namely that asymptomatic transmission has never been the primary cause of outbreaks. What's so bizarre, of course, about the way in which all of this is being handled is that in the past, when there was a pandemic, the sick would be quarantined and isolated and special protection taken to protect the most vulnerable, in this case, the elderly. Instead, what's happened here is the healthy have been quarantined with these lockdowns, social separation, mask wearing, all of which is extremely harmful, not just to the economy, but the health and well-being of human beings and other living things, where wearing masks, of course, involves a recirculation of oxygen-depleted air, which deprives our brains of the oxygen they need to survive, causing irreversible brain damage, putting strains on our cardiovascular system from the absence of oxygen, where younger people and children are especially vulnerable since they need lots of oxygen to build their brains and bodies, such that the leading expert in the area has described masking children and young people as a criminal act. You can find all this on my blog at jamesfetzer.org. Nevertheless, and this is symptomatic of the massive scam to which we are being subjected, the chief medical officer says Canadians who refuse the vaccine won't have the freedom to move around and will have to continue to wear masks. He acknowledges we cannot force someone to take a vaccine, but what we can do is to say for access or ease in getting into certain settings, if you don't have a vaccination, you're not allowed into that setting without other protective materials. What may be mandatory is proof of vaccination in order to have latitude and freedom to move around. I mean, this is as outrageous as it gets. Edward Hendry has published another in a series of quite brilliant pieces about how the groundwork for mandatory vaccines is being laid with a planned digital health transport. On 8 May 2020, he reports, the Associated Press published a press release issued by companies who have developed a digital health passport. The press release announced a corporate partnership between several tech firms to roll out 50 million digital health passports in 50 countries around the world. The digital health passport is called CoviPass. It's manufactured by CirclePass Enterprise as a digital health technology company. The press release explains it works like a traffic signal. A traffic light system confirms your health status as either green or red, red for positive, green for negative, and amber light color indicates a countdown timer to when another COVID test would be due or required. This is completely outrageous. They show an example. If the person's digital passport shows red, then they'll have full freedom to move about and transact business. But if it shows red, unspecified restrictions will be placed on the person. This is completely monstrous. Completely monstrous. There are, by the way, very thorough and detailed reports about the latest study from Johns Hopkins University that showed that the death rates from all categories in past years and from this year are approximately the same. In other words, there's no variation in deaths in 2020 from the coronavirus. That would be the case if indeed it were actually bringing about a pandemic and excessive deaths. In fact, it's very clear that the excess deaths numbers are being generated by counting individuals who have died from the seasonal flu or other respiratory diseases, or even suicide or murder, being relabeled or redescribed as COVID-19 cases. John Rappaport has published a brilliant piece about this, as has Ed Hendry. If you're not familiar with their studies, then you really must go to jamesfetzer.org and read them, because they show that, in fact, having or not having COVID is statistically irrelevant to death, which is an area of specialization of mine in earning my PhD. I did a great deal of research and have subsequently published books about the difference between statistical relevance and causal relevance. Just to give you a hint, Wesley Salmon, with whom I studied in earning my PhD at Indiana, pointed out that on the classic Hempelian theory of explanation, according to which an inference from a law applied to an individual case provides an explanation, is defective because the law could include irrelevant properties. Think, for example, men don't get pregnant. So you could add on, men who take birth controls don't get pregnant. You have a general law, all men who take birth control pills don't get pregnant, applied to John Jones, who took his wife birth control pills, didn't get pregnant, as though that would explain it. What Salmon pointed out is that's an irrelevancy. And yet Hempel's theory would accommodate it. I had done my undergraduate work for Hempel, who had indeed recommended that I go to Indiana were I to pursue graduate work. I would eventually explain that Hempel's theory was also falsified or invalidated by another consideration. Hempel allowed the event description of the event to be explained to be a deductive consequence of the premises of the argument, the general law and special case, but he was adopting the form of argument modus ponens, if P then Q, P therefore Q. I suggest an equally valid use of modus tollens, if P then Q and not Q then not P. For example, suppose it's a law that if you're shot in the head with a 45, then you're dead. Well, if you're hit shot in the head with a 45, you know, that could explain why you're dead. But look, it's equally valid to infer from if you're shot in the head with a 45, then you're dead, but you're not dead. Therefore, you've not been shot in the head by a 45. equally valid, but surely non-explanatory. The fact that you're alive doesn't explain why you've not been shot in the head with a 45. Here's another example Sam had advanced. This cube of sugar has had a dissolving spell cast upon it. Therefore, it dissolved when put into a cup of coffee. But of course, cubes of sugar dissolve in cup of coffees, whether they have dissolving spells cast upon them or not. Now, Salmon developed a theory of statistical relevance explanation, saying that an adequate explanation must take into account all and only the statistically relevant features of the situation. I pointed out that there could be all kinds of statistically relevant factors that don't make a difference. For example, perhaps women who go into labor, you know, on certain dates of the year have certain initials. I mean, it could be that that's statistically relevant, but it's obviously not causally relevant. So I developed a causally relevant model as an alternative, both Hempel and Salmon, combining the best efforts of the elements of their event, of their theories, into the causal relevance model. You can find a nice description, a summary of my research in this area on the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy for the entry on Carl Hempel, which I authored. Nice summary and explanation, a modicum of technical, so I'm seeking to make it less technical. If, in fact, COVID-19 is making no difference to the deaths, the rate of death, the number of deaths in these categories, with or without the presence of COVID, it's very obvious that's evidence that it's not causally relevant. And if it's not causally relevant, then we don't need to take any measure to protect ourselves from COVID-19. The whole thing is a scamdemic. It's political plandemic. I've been pointing this out from the beginning. If you go to Jim the Conspiracy Guy and take a look at my very first presentation there, it was on the COVID phenomenon, political pandemic or medical emergency. Check it out. Meanwhile, we'll be right back with callers. Remember the number, 540-352-4452.
On Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it, that the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes, that Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons in the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11, available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me death!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given right, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Here we have Bruce from Texas. I'm pleased to have you on the air, Bruce. Give me your thoughts.
Yeah, good show so far. You pack a lot into an hour, Jim, more than anybody I've listened to.
I appreciate that. What captured your attention most specifically?
Yeah, what really got my attention here, and let me pull up, I have it. Okay. When you're talking about 9/11 and the trouble you had with Judy Woods,
yeah,
and then the nanothermite and the people in Scholars for 9/11 Truth,
yes.
Remember, I don't know if you remember or not, but I think I mentioned before when Joe Olson was on that I re-uploaded your Real Deal 31 that used to be on NBC on YouTube, unequivocal 9/11 nukes,
yes.
Okay. Do you recall ever saying anything racist or hateful on that show?
Why would there be anything racist or hateful on that show? I'm talking about it. Meaning it was taken down because of an allegation of something racist or hateful?
On November 27th, I got a message when I logged on to YouTube that unequivocal 9/11 nukes Real Deal 31 has been removed for hate speech.
And of course,
so examining evidence, hate speech.
My interpretation is that this was revealing too much truth, and they hate the truth. So for them, the truth is hate speech. I think it's that simple, Bruce. They are so massive in their suppression of evidence that the American people are entitled to know. It's embarrassingly bad.
Yeah, this is 1984 in real life, you know. Orwell's 1984.
I think that's
definitely
true.
So. As far as Fox News is concerned, you recall actor Mike Walsh, I believe his name was. He was there on the street with Rick Leventhal, who is in my opinion, he's a Sayanim, you know, a helper or a Mossad agent. Yes. And Mike Walsh gave the official story in like 30 seconds, you know, and he was giddy and he was, you know, laughing and all that. And so after that, after 9/11, you had that 4-part series on Israeli involvement in 9/11 that was broadcast. And then it was taken away from the archives. So I believe Fox News has been compromised for at least going on 20 years now.
That's really disappointing, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I'm curious as to, you mentioned the repeated mentioning of Venezuela being involved in the hacking, and China too. They do that too with China. And it's pretty disappointing. I mean, we will never get the truth if the Israelis are involved or anyone of that nature. Am I correct in that assessment?
Oh, yeah, I think so, yes. I mean, I've reported it many times, of course, but yes, you're correct that the prospects of getting the truth out here are not good, given the extent to which the Israelis control the media, for example. I mean, I've explained before that I have a panel of 100 executives from CNN, all of whom are dual U.S. Israeli citizens, that I have another panel of 100 executives from NBC, all of whom are dual U.S. Israeli citizens. I have another panel from the New York Times, all of whom are dual U.S. Israeli citizens, where I'm convinced that the reason the Israelis have thrown in against Donald Trump is because he's not willing to bomb Iran. And I believe they see in Joe Biden a more likely prospect to succumb to the pressure they intend to apply for the sake of bringing about that outcome.
Yes, I believe you're correct. He's already stated he's going to put troops back into the Middle East. And he has no qualms at all. Did you hear about Joe Biden's daughter's diary?
No.
It was not recorded. Yeah. No? I'll send it to your email so you can look over the article.
This is something about sexual abuse or whatever?
Yes. Yeah.
Go ahead and talk about it. Go ahead and talk about it. I mean, that's totally appropriate.
Yeah, from what I understand, I don't have the article in front of me, but she wrote in her diary that she had taken showers in the nude with her father.
That's right. Which she now realized may have been inappropriate. Yes, that's in some of my reporting about Joe Biden. It said completely disgusting.
And she became a sex addict, which is pretty common with children who were abused at a young age, you know.
Oh, really? She also became a sex addict. She's acknowledged.
Sex addict and alcoholic. Yes.
Fascinating.
How about Joe Biden saying that? Go ahead, then I'll wait because we got a little bit of a delay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I just hadn't picked up on that she had become a sex addict, and you're correct. Yes, that does happen with individuals who are subjected to sexual abuse as children.
Yeah, and then what's this about his excuse for his broken foot, that he was coming out of the shower wet and he was playing with the dog, grabbing it by the tail, and the dog ran and he slipped on a rug?
Yes.
I mean, come on, you know, do we have bestiality involved in this crap now? I mean, this guy is damaged goods, you know?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, that's just a stupid, stupid report. I mean, give us a break.
Give us a break, yeah. Oh, as far as YouTube is concerned, they also took down one of my favorite videos from this channel. It's called All Time Conspiracies, and it was about the USS Cole and the controversy concerning the explosives that were discovered, explosive residue that was traced to either U.S. or Israel, and the CCTV footage was altered by the FBI. And that FBI investigator who quit in disgust, John O'Neill, that he was offered a job as head of security in the World Trade Centers, and he died on 9/11. I'm sure his desk blew up or something like that. Well, that was taken down as well. I mean, they're going after everything.
Yeah, well, they were setting him up to take him out. There's no doubt about it, in my opinion. Yes, I agree.
Mm-hmm. All righty, Jim. Good show so far. And if there's any other callers, I'll let them come on.
Bruce, thanks very much. I appreciate it. You're welcome to stay. We don't have other callers right now. If there's more you'd like to add, there are other stories I can cover in the meanwhile.
I'll hang on here, and then if I come up with something, I'll unmute my mic and chime in again.
Okay, that very good, Bruce. Very good. I repeat, as everyone knows, or should by now, the number to call in is 540-352-4452. Mitchell will handle your call and get you on. Anyone out there has issues about any of these things, I'm glad to hear from you. The blatant fraud in Georgia was actually captured on a closed-circuit television channel and presented to the members of the Georgia panel reviewing this matter. We also had voting machines and USB drives with totals that were altered overnight in Nevada. In other words, they'd take home the USB drive and it would have one tabulated number and total, and then bring it back in the morning with a different tabulated total and number. That's pretty damn blatant. The Wisconsin Supreme Court has said that the Trump election contest must start in a lower court. I think they're very sympathetic to what's happening here. It's been sent back to the circuit court level for review, and they've appointed a judge to consolidate the two cases involving Milwaukee and Dane County, which are the two most populous centers in Wisconsin. As Richard Charnin pointed out to me years ago, you have to steal an election, you have to go where the votes are. And in the case of Minnesota, Wisconsin, the votes are in Milwaukee, just as in Michigan, they're largely in Detroit, in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia. We see these large cities, therefore, Georgia, Atlanta, you know, being used to generate massive voter fraud. Now, Trump has observed that Biden can't be president if we're right about the voter fraud. I think this is a significant observation. He did a video last week. It was about 42, 43 minutes that I thought was simply excellent, which he was giving a comprehensive overview about voter fraud during the 2020 election. And he mentioned in passing that describing it as possibly the most important speech I've ever made, or I would add will ever make, that lots of bad things happened during the election, and argued that if we are right about the fraud, Joe Biden can't be president. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of votes. We're talking about numbers that nobody has ever seen before. Actually, they're far beyond hundreds of thousands of votes. It turns out we're talking about tens of millions of votes. The best numbers I have is that the election was being followed in real time because Trump had laid the trap by his executive order of 12 September 2018 that if there were any foreign interference in an American election, that the government would have the right to seize the assets and prosecute the personnel of the offending parties. It turns out, of course, Dominion is based in Canada. Seidel is based in Spain. The raid took place on servers in Frankfurt, Germany, where, according to the reports I have, Gina Haspel, the director of the CIA, was apprehended managing the theft of the election, that her bodyguards put up a fight, that five of those involved in the special operations raid were actually killed in the process, that on the way to Guantanamo during a flight, she realized it was in her best interest to explain everything she knew, which is now being concealed by a bogus report of her death. I think that's exactly what we'd expect. And the report was far too rapid to have been bona fide, all of this. Yeah, is that you, Bruce, or Mitchell? Mitchell, you're also welcome.
No, it's Bruce.
Go ahead, Bruce.
Yeah, either she could be dead, maybe she's in a witness protection program.
Well, that's what I'm implying, yeah. The equivalent, giving her a fake obituary because she's in witness protection. And obviously, she would know virtually everything there is to know. The Dominion machines, as most of you may well be aware, turn out to have the ability not only to flip votes, in this case from Trump to Biden. I've yet to hear of a single instance of any vote having been flipped from Biden to Trump, but also to manufacture new ballots. It has a printer that's a part of the component, so they can actually manufacture new ballots on the spot. But also, interestingly, to weight ballots differently so that the Republican ballots were only weighted 0.7, that the Democrat ballots were being weighted 1.3. So you add 1.7 and 1.3 and 0.7, and of course you get 2, so that it's very clever that the Dominion software is supposed to guarantee that if you do a vote audit, that it won't be revealed, which is why they're so prized and esteemed. I'm pleased to see we've been joined by Paul from California. Join the conversation, my friend.
Well, Wisconsin lost again. Can't even score a touchdown on your home field. That's what happens when you mess with President Trump's election.
Well, it was very disappointing. Yeah, I was doing a marathon conference on false flags and conspiracies on Saturday and Sunday, so I didn't have the chance to watch the game. I did wear a Wisconsin shirt and pointed out how the COVID pandemic and the lockdowns are depriving us of everything that gives our lives meaning, not just sporting events, concerts, restaurants, plays, just associated with families and friends, that it's completely outrageous, totally unwarranted. But it is the case, Paul, as you observe, even though Indiana's starting quarterback was out for the game, so too were three of our quarterback Mertz receivers. And that he had, you know, kind of an in-between game. The defense was pretty good. Nevertheless, Indiana won 14-6, where Wisconsin only scored on 2 field goals. I've got an article upstairs I'm reading about the game. But frankly, I don't mind having missed it when it had that kind of outcome. It would have been very distressing to me.
Well, if you recall my theory from before, I mean, you look at the terrible year that Michigan is having. Michigan State and Michigan, terrible, and they messed with Trump in his election. Penn State, Pennsylvania messed with Trump big time. Meanwhile, for example, schools like Alabama, you know, no problem, solidly red, undefeated. Notre Dame and Indiana, undefeated. Also, Indiana having a great year. They didn't try to mess with Trump's election. North Carolina is, you know, doing okay, but Duke is absolutely having a horrible time because, you know, they couldn't even score a single point at home against Miami. Florida went solidly for Trump. So I think there might be something here. You know, like I said before, you know, we need to do more work on it, though.
Well, I'd be very surprised if there were a causal connection between the scam voting in those states and the performance of their football teams. But with the coronavirus, you know, it's all being compromised. You got players wearing masks when they're not on the field, certainly the coaches, and it's stupidity in the extreme. It's doing damage to their bodies. I've seen video of young girls playing soccer, and these are teenage girls. They're in great physical condition. They're very vigorous in their activities. And they're killing their brain cells, putting strain on their cardiovascular system. I believe this is all part of the engineering design to fulfill the Deagle.com prediction that the population is going to drop from 332 million in 2020 to less than 100 million in 2025, actually 99 million. Look at that. That's 233 million Americans are going to die in the next 5 years. And I believe that COVID is one of the ways. I mean, we know we have skyrocketing suicide rates, especially among younger people, children, because they're isolated from their classmates. They feel alone. They don't have social interaction, a sense of support. But we're also getting a huge number of other deaths that are being classified as COVID, even from suicide or murder. We know that the economy has just dropped precipitously. People can't pay their rent or their mortgage. This is what the Great Reset wants, to put the public dependent upon the government. They're going to offer a guaranteed income and a living space of about 300 square feet and pay off your mortgage, your student loans, and your credit card debt if you will agree to surrender to them all of your property and assets and to conform to a regimen of inoculation. All finances are going to be digital, so if you don't conform to their behavioral expectations, it can be cut off. This was well illustrated just in a simple case of cutting off credit cards in the brilliant film with Will Smith and Gene Hackman, Enemy of the State, which I highly recommend. It's really quite revealing about the world we live in today, and where if you refuse to take the vaccine regimen, and I absolutely recommend no one accept vaccination, you'll be declared a public health menace and put into a FEMA camp. And then if you continue to persist, your head will be separated from your body. That's the final termination of your role in society. Yeah, Paul, go ahead.
Bruce,
go ahead, Bruce.
Go ahead, Bruce.
Help me real quick there, Paul. No, I'm just going to say one thing I do notice watching football is you can tell which state has the liberal and the global homo governments by the amount of people that are in the stand. You know?
There were people in the stand, I think, for Alabama games. I think there were actually living, breathing people. They were a little spaced out, but they were real people. In some of these other games, they have paper, cardboard cutouts. I mean, how embarrassing, how bad is that, Paul?
Right. No, that's noticeable. So, you know, I'm just having a little fun, I guess, when I call in with such
I don't mind. I don't mind, Paul.
There's times where it's kind of like, you know, what else can we say? What else can be said, okay? I'm so effing pissed off all the time, okay?
Yes.
I'm so sick. And when I hear you talk about, like, this Deagle thing, I don't believe it for a second. I don't think any of that is going to happen. But just the fact that they have this hanging over our heads. And to be honest, the way I feel right now, I feel terrible for children. No doubt about it. But if 100 million adults disappear and they're the ones that believe in this virus, good riddance, I say, okay? I am sickened by the lack of courage, the lack of intelligence, the lack of backbone, the lack of character of all my fellow Californians everywhere I goddamn go, okay, acting like sheep. A friend of mine, right, went to a little local town. He goes there all the time, a little place called Los Gatos, nice little town with lots of little shops and, you know, coffee restaurants. It's the kind of place where people get out and walk around, right? Well, he told me that 75% of the people he saw were walking around with masks on, outdoors. They're not going into a store, going into a restaurant. They're outdoors walking. They got masks on. I see it all the time. I see little kids playing. You know, remember, Jim, when we were growing up in the Midwest, or when I was growing up in the Midwest, everybody rode their bikes everywhere. A little patch of
kids going around everywhere, right?
Well, now I see, just the other day, I saw a little pack of kids on bikes. Every goddamn one of them had a mask on. I feel like their parents should be whipped within an inch of their life for even allowing this. I say things on occasion, but I've stopped doing it because what's the point? People just give me looks like, who the hell are you? Or they'll give me a perplexed look or a dirty look. But I've told people, I say, take that mask off your kid. He needs oxygen. It's terrible what you're doing, you know? What else can I say? Paul, I'm not going to sit and have a conversation with him. Anyway,
hey guys, you want to hear a conspiracy that might bother you?
Go ahead.
This is something I saw on 4chan, and it seemed pretty, not plausible. Yeah, maybe plausible, but
let's assume that, the COVID virus is real and it's been genetically engineered, okay?
It ain't.
And of course, okay. Let's assume that. Okay, this is my line of thought here that I read and seems plausible. Because I had COVID, and I, of course, here I am. You know, I walked out of the hospital. Okay, no, I'm not going in your damn room. Anyhow, they give everybody that will take it the inoculation. Okay, so now they have this inoculation. Then you're gonna have that 20% of the troublesome people who always push back against the government, these conspiracy theorists, et cetera. Okay, so now they release a deadly strain of COVID. And so only the sheeple are inoculated from this thing, and it gets rid of their problem of the troublemakers.
Yeah, but okay, so that's interesting. I don't believe it for a second. As I've made clear on the show many times, and I don't have any doubt about this in my mind, if they did have some virus to take us all out, what are they messing around for? Why don't they just do it? Okay, they've not.
They need a population of NPCs is what they need.
Look, they already have that. Nothing has been demonstrated. That has been demonstrated that we have people that are stupid, that are obedient, or that are compliant. They're just training the rest of us. So the bottom line is this: if you understand the work of Thomas Cowan, okay, or Andrew Kaufman, or Dr. Stefan Lanka, and some of these other people, Lorraine Day, Sherry Tenpenny, many other people are saying that all this virus nonsense
Lorraine
is
Day.
Exactly that nonsense. How can you correlate with something what they tell you? Over 80% of the people are asymptomatic, right?
Paul,
no symptoms.
Paul,
how can you Paul. Correlate that with illness? All right, sorry.
Paul, So what did China do? Did they play along, that they've set up a big skit when they were hit in November of 2019.
So here's what I would say to that.
And Iran?
Really?
Italy?
What?
This was all a game? Come on.
Look, you want to see the...
Stand by. We're going to a break now. We'll be right back.
The videos I've seen. Uh-huh.
We'll be right back with our callers. Get after mad. This break. Stand by.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And you will catch The Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's The Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here. We're already here. We're already here.
I will defend myself against their tyranny. Number three is my radio broadcast. I'm squarely in front of the public all the time, and they all know what's going on.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
Hello, my name is John Wayne, and I do a broadcast here at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, called The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
Freedom and fear are at war.
And folks, I assure you, we are in defense condition one. As we journey perilously through this paradigm that we currently reside in, and I ask that you join me every Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
We shall never surrender.
All right, thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Well, I have on the line with me Mark from Houston and Paul from California. I just add that Mitchell has observed that Dominion machines have no safeguards against duplicate scans. It appears to have been the case that in some of these precincts, they were running the same ballots through the machine again and again and again. And that the Ravens claim they discovered four different COVID strains on the team, but there turned out to be a vast number. And if you're asymptomatic, you're not contagious.
It's nonsense. Okay,
I'm sorry.
So by the way, just quickly, so it's Bruce from Texas, Jim. So Bruce asked me a question, and even though I'm tempted to go on a 10-minute rant, which is, I feel I got it in me, I'm just going to follow. I'm going to come back with another question. So, Bruce, have you read John Rappaport's article where he showed from the CDC's own publication that they haven't isolated the virus? Have you seen that?
Paul?
John Rappaport has a blog called No More Fake News. He posts articles several times a week. Are you still there, Bruce? Did you ever see that article?
Paul, I have it on my blog at jamesfetzer.org. Yeah.
Okay.
We all know the PCR test. Bruce is not here, Paul, so it's you and me, my friend. Now.
Okay, because you heard the question that he asked me before.
No, I did not hear the question.
Yeah, well, he basically was, as I was coming to the end of my rant, he started to say, okay, so what happened in Wuhan, China, or what happened here? What about this? What about that? It's if he was sort of advocating a little bit for this virus, which is, I maintain, and you remember well, Jim, back in March, okay, I could probably find the show archives, I called it a snipe hunt, meaning that I believe that there isn't anything new or different in the natural world. I don't believe they have any attenuated virus. They don't have any gain-of-function virus. It's all total bullshit. Okay, and the whole idea of testing anybody for anything, if they admitted, and the CDC admitted that they haven't isolated it, what the F are they testing for? Okay, or what are they treating for? It's complete and utter nonsense. It's an IQ test. It's always been an IQ test. And by the way, I made that point on a blog spot, and I had a couple of people agree with me. I'll tell you how absurd it is, Jim. It's really getting just absolutely insane. So a friend of my, a coworker of my brother's, right, was scheduled for the consultation with his doctor for surgery for kidney stones. So he goes in, they give him a test. Okay, now mind you, he's got kidney stones and he knows it because it's periodically painful and they move around a little bit, right? And it's already been diagnosed. Well, he gets the COVID test. He's positive. They tell him to go home, come back in 15 days. Right. Meanwhile, it's, you know, he's suffering. This is the insanity. Our medical system has to be smashed to the ground. Okay, we have just like all right, I could go on like this, but you know where I'm coming from, right? This thing is insane. Everything is insane. Everything is the world of inversion. It's lies. I would say to Bruce and anybody out there who's listening, you know, Professor Jim Fetzer has made his living debunking and proving the fraud of every single thing you could possibly think of the last 10, 15, 20 years. And even before you started, Jim, things were fraudulent. You just didn't know it until you started looking into it. But now we're supposed to believe that there's a real virus or that there's a surge or a new wave of infections. You know, California here, we're supposedly operating December 6th yesterday, went into effect at Sunday night at 10 p.m., a lockdown again, and a curfew at 10 p.m. at night. We're not only essential travel, essential business. Okay, forget about Christmas.
What is not essential? Who are they to judge what's essential? Who are they to dictate our lives, Paul? I couldn't agree with you more. And of course, you know, the very first show I did on Jim the Conspiracy Guy was about the COVID phenomenon, political pandemic or medical emergency. It's always been a political pandemic. It's intended to not only benefit the Democrats against Trump by justifying mail-in ballots, but to lay the groundwork for the Great Reset, where we're going to surrender all of our property and assets to become wards of the state, where a small number of extremely powerful individuals are going to own the whole effing planet. And these are individuals, it appears, associated with a World Economic Forum. Paul, it's just outrageous. I mean, you're correct to be outraged by it. You're completely correct to be angry. It's insulting, but it's also threatening to the max.
Well, you know, to bring up an old, you know, well-known quote from George Washington, when tyranny becomes law, rebellion becomes duty. And that's where we're at. You know, I just don't know if I see if I see the spirit. I saw the spirit multiple times with this pandemic nonsense when all these armed guys started showing up at state capitals. OK, that's there. And when Governor Northam of Virginia started talking about some draconian gun legislation, thousands of armed men showed up at the state capitol. Okay, great. That's exactly what we need. We need that spirit, plus we need action. Because I believe that this whole thing, I'm reminded of the time that you had Cynthia McKinney on your show, and she talked about the fact that when they had votes for these funding packages for Israel, right, that it was always like a million to two, and the only people that voted no were her and Ron Paul.
Okay. Yeah, she
so this is the, Paul. This is the situation that we're in.
Yes, yes, I agree. Bruce has rejoined us, Paul, so he may want to offer his own comments. Bruce, go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I tried finding John Rappaport. He doesn't have a Wikipedia page that I could find. Have you ever seen one, Jim?
Well, there would have been. Wikipedia is an Israeli operation. After I participated in a conference on academic freedom, are there limits to inquiry, using JFK 9/11 and the Holocaust as example, they gutted my Wikipedia page, took out all the stuff I had about JFK 9/11, Wellstone, Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing. They just gutted it. So if they took out John Rappaport, it wouldn't surprise me. But his blog is entitled No More Fake News. And you can find several of those to which Paul is making reference on my own blog at jamesfetzer.org because I republish them. He's one of extremely exceptional sources following the whole CD hoax in great detail.
Yeah. Well, I've also seen some other we call alternative media personality who didn't have one. Usually like in your example, if you're saying the truth and you're upsetting some people, they'll tarnish you in your Wikipedia page, but they won't delete you. But I did find in muckrack.com, I recall hearing him on, you know, these as seen in Canada Free Press, Zero Hedge, InfoWars, Coast to Coast AM, The Jewish Voice, He's Jewish, isn't he?
You're wrong about Zero Hedge is actually excellent. I don't see any bias. I certainly don't see any pro-Zionist attitude coming from Zero Hedge. Let me interrupt to say Chris from Vermont has joined us. Chris, please join the conversation.
Thank you so much, Mr. Fetzer. Thank you, Mitchell, for producing. This is Christopher from Northern Vermont, Green Heart 1 in the chat. My mom got sick. They tested her positive. The doctor, because she has arrhythmia, speedy heart, they prescribed her prednisone. Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
and then that, of course, increases her heart rate. It's basically these docs go home and good luck. I mean, of course, they don't prescribe vitamins. But Professor Fetzer, the reason I'm calling in today is I wanted to give you an update on our glorious support President Trump automobile parade over the weekend.
Okay.
Thank you so much. With almost little to no public publicity, we drove to, we had two different groups, one starting in Barry and one starting in Rutland, Vermont. We drove to the State House Capitol. We had, oh, maybe 75 people, almost all of them waving flags, and I only saw maybe one or two face masks. And I
That's great.
Saw everybody there, and as I approached with my two-car caravan, we approached on foot. I gave out my new battle cry, which is becoming my trademark, which is which we got from the mechanic here on Revolution Radio. Unmask freedom, our rights trump your fears.
Good. And I like that. Unmask freedom, our rights trump your fears. That's excellent. Thank
you, Chris.
By the way, we've
mechanic.
Also, go ahead, say more.
Thank you. I'll quickly wrap this up. So the organizer was dilly-dallying, so I didn't waste any time. I stood right up on the steps, and I opened the ceremony with a prayer. I called out our governor for working against us, being by voting for President Trump, by being dumb enough to admit it, and I thanked him for being honest. I demanded that he end the lockdown, which he recently reinstituted, and according to Addendum 8, page 4, line 3, specifically prohibiting gathering of large groups incidental to ceremonies, waving flags is incidental to a ceremony. The police made no effort whatsoever to say boo to us. And in this opening prayer, I prayed for all of the criminals of the world to repent. And if they failed to repent, I called for justice to rain down pain upon them. And I gave a very powerful opening prayer. And I called for the Holy Spirit to open all hearts and minds, and everybody cheered, and it was fantastic. And at the end, since the organizer never gave me the megaphone, I stood up again, and I reminded all of our patriotic supporters to be gentle and kind and loving to their neighbors, because you just can't talk logic to them.
That's very good, Chris. I like what you did there, and I like your slogan. Brew has joined us. Brew, participate. Come on, join the conversation.
Yeah, I wouldn't give the megaphone to anybody saying be gentle and kind and all that.
Kumbaya, Brew. Kumbaya.
Hallelujah.
I'm teasing. Hey, you know, look, these numbers have not changed in months, Jim. The China virus in China, mainland China, still to this day. And this is the same numbers from a week ago when I decided to look it up again. 86,634 confirmed cases with only 4,634 deaths since the whole thing began. Now, China, 1.4 billion people, this is the numbers they report. And this thing hasn't changed in months, okay? Now, here in the United States, we're going through the roof on deaths, and cases and so on. You know, we got over 14 million cases, allegedly, since this thing began in the United States. But yet, allegedly, only around 7 million have recovered. Because we're such nastier people or something's going on. You know, every flu case.
Corruption's going on.
Yeah. Every flu case is a COVID-19. You know, Bruce is like, these people are going, I had it. How do you know you had it? They don't even have a test for it.
Oh, I had it.
How do, you maybe you should have a nasty case of the flu. I'm just saying, maybe you just had a nasty case of the flu, because I had a nasty case
of the flu.
I had a nasty case of the flu.
Are you going to refer to me? Are you going to give me a chance to talk back?
Well, let me finish. I'll finish. Oh. You can talk back. You can,
okay.
In February, I had a nasty case of the flu. I felt it coming on. I felt it in my lungs coming on for a couple of weeks. And then one day, the weather changed on me. And next thing you know, I knew I was sick. Boom. I started pounding oregano. I started pounding vitamin C in soup. And I rested that day. I pretty much had it knocked out by the next day. But it lingered with me. Now, to me, it was a nasty case of the flu. Period. Did I go, oh, I have COVID? And this is February. So this is before all the propaganda began. You know, the year before, in December, I got really nasty sick. Now, allegedly, that was bronchitis. I ended up taking the amoxicillin and the Z-Pak for that. Now, that was allegedly bronchitis. Now, that had me sick. I mean, I was trying to go to work on job sites, walking up stair flights of stairs, 13 flights. I was exhausted. I couldn't breathe. I was nasty. I finally had to take off work for the first time forever. And it took me weeks and weeks and weeks after the Z-Pak was gone, whatever, to recover. Now, allegedly, that was bronchitis. I never had bronchitis before. But if anything was COVID, or you wanted to call it COVID, that would have been COVID. If it was nasty, sick, and hard to breathe and would last and linger for months on end, that was bronchitis. So if bronchitis is worse than the COVID.
Quickly to agree with some of this here is people in colder climates, like Brew lives in a colder, you know, climate. He's a little bit more north than I am. We get more sunshine out here. That is all it really is. The flu season is mostly seasonal, and it doesn't have anything to do with a virus. And if anybody listening on this call goes to whatreallymakesyouill.com and just listens to the interview of those authors that put that book together, it's congruent with everything else that I've said. Viruses don't make us ill. There's never been any proof, any double-blind controlled studies that show that viruses cause illness. Viruses are in us, in all of us, but these people that suffer these long, cold winters are much more likely to have a harder time to overcome these healing crises, and low amounts of vitamin D and plus who knows what else is going on in your diet, the amount of water you drink, the amount of good quality fruit.
Well,
and
Paul, you say
get.
Flu season. When does flu season actually start? It's remarkably coincides when they start giving out flu shots. Ground zero, who got the first flu shot?
Right.
So right now, all the cases are skyrocketing right when they're pushing all the flu shots. But they're giving out flu shots in a time when the flu no longer exists, everything's COVID. But yet they know the cases are rising because they know they're giving everybody the flu when they give them a shot.
It's simpler than that. They're simply counting flu cases as COVID. Even suicides, automobile deaths, they're calling them all COVID. It's totally fraudulent. There's no increase in deaths from COVID. It's just stunning.
Now Bruce may not like him, but he's doing okay. You know, take him or leave him. He's got whatever. David Icke has been doing really good work and research, and you can find his. He's got a channel at band.video. He's got his own David Icke channel there, and he's doing really good work on the coronavirus, the Great Reset, all sorts of stuff, good interviews, so on and so forth. He's tearing it apart. Bruce, I totally recommend you go check at least David Icke out, if not John Rappaport. John Rappaport's been on this since the beginning. John Rappaport is incredible, and so on.
I've heard them both, and I've heard David Icke talk about the lizard people and all that, too. You ever heard of a limited hangout? I'm sure we've already discussed that with
Dr.
Fetzer.
Bruce, stay on point, okay? Yeah, we can all say little things that discredit us, right? I mean, like, oh, yeah, he believes in the flat Earth, but what else?
Didn't you say that the moon was fake and you didn't understand why it had the phases in the moon, that it was caused by the Earth's shadow and actually was the perspective of the moon being in phase?
Okay, I said a lot of things, and I'm perfectly willing to talk about them or defend them any other time. But right now, we're talking about.
But you talk about yourself as if you're highly intelligent, and you know, you have gift of gab.
No ad hominem.
But sometimes your facts are kind of wacky,
Bruce, we're staying on point here. If we put a brainometer on me and a brainometer on you, I'm going to peg it. I don't know if you're going to move it much. So, you got anything else to say?
Well, go ahead. I'm going to listen for the rest of the show.
Okay, here, gentlemen.
Thanks for taking my call.
Let me just wrap up on my Vermont update
here. Go ahead, Chris. Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
Thank you so much. So the Patriots, we continue to meet every Friday in Barry for our weekly flag wave, City Hall Park, Barry, 4 to 8 p.m. And on Saturdays, support President Trump automobile parade. I did give a brief interview under Christopher Merriweather on local NBC affiliate, and they did produce, I don't have TV, but my friend said they produced an excellent brief segment. They included, and this is on topic, they produced a brief segment with my soundbite using the word coup, because remember, COVID-19, the election, and then global reset, this is all part of an attempted coup on the United States. And I'm going to wrap up with this, Jim, because I really wanted you to see the previous segment from WCAX, who was a no-show on Saturday. I alerted them. And so it's WCAX.com. And if anyone, listeners, want to grab a pen, and I'll send you the link again, Jim, because I don't know why it's not working. But the date was the Saturday after the election. So that was November 8th. And so it's WCAX, that's C like Charlie, WCAX.com/2020/11/08/, and now the title of this segment was Trump Supporters Protest Election Results on State House Steps. So
thanks.
2020
thanks, Chris.
11.
Thanks, Chris.
So,
I'm real glad
a dash
you're doing
in
all
between
that.
Each word.
I'm real glad you're
Chris,
doing all that. Yeah, go ahead, Paul.
Just hang on real quick. Yeah, before you go, Chris, I just wanted to let you know. So that was a really good call. Appreciate that. You made a comment about your governor and giving these orders. Just know for sure that they don't have any authority. State after state after state, there's been multiple rulings, including in California. These governors have zero authority to give orders. So you need to stay on that point. I would highly suggest you go to thehealthyamerican.org. Peggy Hall, she's got a lot of info about this. There's also constitutionallawgroup.us, so on and so on. Governors have zero authority to give orders, and that's, in my opinion, the way that this should be attacked. So this starts
to unravel. They're
making
laws through executive order, and they're opposing the Constitution. Will you please repeat
correct.
Those two websites and the previous one about what makes you ill?
So whatreallymakesyouill.com, all right? The other one is thehealthyamerican.org. And among many good law sites is constitutionallawgroup.us. And by the way, for everybody listening with what Bruce said about David Icke, I agree with Bruce. David Icke is a solid, solid guy. And specifically what he talked about before was shape-shifting reptilians from another dimension. So let's get it right. Does it really matter? I don't think so. It could be true. How do we know it's not? Bruce, that's what I would suggest. But the fact of the matter is the kind of work that people like David Icke does, I don't think anybody should be discrediting him by, you know, slinging any mud.
My friend who's a ski instructor and a picture of health and fitness got the flu a couple years ago, and it almost killed him. And it wouldn't surprise me one bit if they're also pumping out these viruses in the airborne aerosol emissions, a.k.a. chemtrails.
Well, there's a lot of stuff in chemtrails. I'm not sure if viruses are a component. Okay.
With that point, as we noted before, we don't really know the exact delivery system. Because, you know, look, there's 10 companies in charge of all the food supply, less than 6 companies in charge of all the meat supply. You know, they control
right.
the water. They control this. Also, we don't know the exact delivery system. You know, anytime you walk into a store and they spray an aerosol, what's in that aerosol? You know, all sorts of things. When it comes to China, you know, there was a big movie that went on there. To this very day, have you seen anybody in real life on our news of anybody walking for 20 seconds and falling flat on their face like they played that TikTok video from China? And that 20, 30-second video had to scare the world. And what China did with the big drill and the big theatrics, you know, they have empty cities over there. It was one big movie set. This is what they
correct.
Did. To this day, they're reporting 86,000 cases in all out of 1.4 billion. Now, did they send people out to get people sick around the world? Because there was mass flights out of China to Italy and Europe and so on. They could have had agents all over. We could think of the movie 12 Monkeys. Is this stuff possible? Can they put an agent in the air or whatever? We know there's stuff that makes you sick. We know there's chemical warfare. They can, but in more controlled environments. Now, if they walked in
that's
a room,
all.
If Donald Trump walked in a room and an agent came in there and released an aerosol, it could get the guy sick. Like Rudy Giuliani, he's going all over the place. Rudy Giuliani was a great example, not wearing a mask and whatever. All of a sudden, he's reported to have COVID. Well, what if he was in a room and someone just went by him and spread something on his clothing and got him sick? Who knows?
Correct. So you can get, you can, there's toxins. So for example, people have made this point, and I think I agree with it, that the only way that we can get viruses from other people is to be, is to be injected. Okay. So this is why they want to inject us. The bottom line is if you do, let's say you take a bunch of viruses or what we call virus particles and you concentrate them and you inject them into somebody, they're going to get sick. But that doesn't mean that we get viruses from each other. It just doesn't work like that. And to be honest, I don't believe it ever has worked like that.
Well, there's also absorption of the skin. Because look, absorption of skin, like a deadly weapon that exists today is this fentanyl. Just a X amount of fentanyl, somebody rubbed it onto your skin, it could probably kill you. It could overdose you just by absorbing into your skin. That's how dangerous that stuff is. That's why they said it was so dangerous. There was so much of that shipped in the United States. If they put it in the water supply, boom, it would kill millions.
And it comes from China.
And again, the whole thing about testing positive, I don't care what they say anymore, because if they haven't isolated the so-called virus, then what are they testing for? So again, positive, false positive, negative, it means nothing. They're conditioning us to, we got to get a test. All your life, Brew, all your life, Jim, all your life, Chris and Bruce, you never had to get tested for anything. You just went out, you did things, you got a job, you lived your life. Now we're supposed to get tested.
Right. With a minute to go, Jim, do you think they're going to roll out the vaccine, Operation Warp Speed, and get everybody injected? What do you think, Jim?
I hope not. I'm not in favor of any vaccine, and I think Trump is only supporting it because most of the public thinks we need it. But I believe after this re-election thing, he's not going to be moving aggressively with it at all. That's my take. I want to thank you all for calling in. Bruce from Texas, and of course, Paul from California, Chris from Vermont, and Brew from Chicago. You guys make excellent contributions here. I'm always glad. And Mitchell, of course, is doing a superb job. I'm really glad to be on Revolution Radio on this new schedule, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Central, noon to 2 p.m. Eastern, 9 to 11 a.m.
Who owns you? If you're not
in
control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine.
There is blood on the wire.
Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays for Voices on the Wind with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people under fire.
Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of